listening to County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. Today's episode focuses on the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing and protecting women's constitutional right to vote. We're joined by two county leaders to reflect on this momentous anniversary and to have a candid conversation on the challenges and opportunities for women in local government. I'm your host, Kate Pierce, NYSAC's Multimedia Specialist. Let's have our guests give us an introduction.
My name is Martha Sarbry. I am chairwoman of the Tioga County Legislature. I've been on the legislature for 15 years, and I have been the chairwoman of the legislature for 7. I am also president-elect of the NYSAC organization.
My name is Martha Robertson. I'm on the Tompkins County Legislature, which I've been on since 2002 and had a variety of roles, including chair of the legislature for 6 years and now chair of a couple of committees, including budget, which in 2020 is going to be a hard one.
What reflections do you have on the centennial of women's suffrage?
So this month is August, and it is the month that the 19th Amendment was ratified, allowing women to vote. And if it weren't for those women that came before me, I would not be in this position today. So I want to say thank you for the pain and suffering and years of work that those people before me paved the way so I could hold office. Very, very proud to do that.
On one hand, it's only been 100 years. It seems insane that it took 100 years after, it took more than 100 years after our country, after our revolution. It took almost 150 years before women had the right to vote. And in fact, unfortunately, that wasn't even a complete victory. As we know, the 19th Amendment did say that that discrimination on the basis of sex was now illegal, but there were whole categories of Americans who still couldn't vote. For example, the Asian Pacific Islander Americans didn't have the right to vote until 1952. Native Americans didn't get the right to vote till 1924, and in Utah till 1962. So, and African Americans and Latinx Americans were really still not guaranteed the right to vote in practice until 1965 with the Voting Rights Act. But frankly, we see today that the right to vote is still not guaranteed in practice for many, many, many Americans. Americans have fought and fought and fought for the right to cast a ballot. And we just have to honor that by casting those ballots this year. Whether you vote early, whether you vote by mail-in ballot, whether you vote in person on election day, however you do it, make your voice known and cast your ballot in 2020. But in any case, the celebration that at least gender was not going to be a category for discrimination was a big deal in 1920. So we are proud that that happened, kind of astonished it took so long.
How are your communities celebrating this centennial anniversary?
So this month in Tioga County, we are celebrating women's suffrage, the 100th year nationally. Our village in downtown Owego is full of flags representing the suffrage movement, and they are yellow, white, and purple. And they are depicting our support for those women and men who fought for the right so that women can vote. So that's going on in our village today. If you go to the Tioga County Tourism website, you can see all those beautiful flags and many other things. This week, as a special event, we are doing something different. We are having a woman come and speak. She is an interpreter presenting Susan B. Anthony. And so Susan B. will be speaking on what it was like to be involved in the suffrage movement. She will share her thoughts and she will share stories that relate to things that happened during that time. This is a closed event because, of course, we cannot have large group gatherings. So we're going to have a few people in the audience, but we are going to videotape it and then post it on Facebook and on YouTube so that the community can share it so we can continue for the rest of the year. So we're pretty excited about that. That's something different. Of course, we had a lot of other things planned this year. We were going to have a wonderful parade and we were going to do a lot of outreach across the entire county, but we were not able to do that. We did lose our grant funding. So we made something out of nothing. We put our heads together and came up with some creative things. The legislature presented a legislative proclamation on behalf of the 100-year anniversary. The Arts Council also did displays of art and projects relating to women's suffrage. The Historical Society had several presentations. We also did something unique. We did a podcast where several women in the community chose a significant woman that they could relate to and then tell the story about that woman. So I think there were like a dozen of us who did that. And mine was on Maya Angelou. I read one of her poems. I've always been moved by her strength and her character. So that's who I spoke about. But we had women from all walks of life and experiences, family members, women in history. So that was a wonderful tribute. That was pretty fun to do. So that was very beneficial as well. And then we also have a little art project for the kids to do, and that was to draw protest posters and depict what it would look like back in 100 years ago or 120 years ago, however. So that's kind of what we've been up to here in Tioga County, making the most out of a difficult situation. And the other thing is the community has gotten involved in the spirit of this thing, and especially the women-owned businesses, they're displaying their flags. But then there's a couple of businesses that have picked up suffrage items. They made t-shirts, they had artists create new flags, they shipped in suffrage items to sell to the community, and people are purchasing them and sort of wearing the t-shirts and wearing the buttons that people made. So it's a good thing to do in the middle of a pandemic. It's a positive thing to do in the middle of a pandemic. So we're excited about that.
This is one of the losses of COVID, is that we are celebrating centennial anniversary. It's a huge occasion for our country by Zoom calls. You know, on Tuesday night we have a legislature meeting, and we will all wear white. So in our little boxes on the Zoom call, you'll see legislators all in white. We'll have a proclamation. We'll have the League of Women Voters, some other folks speak, but we can't have the kind of gathering or celebration that we'd really like to have and that the occasion deserves. So, but I do hope people will make note of it in their own minds, in their own families, that this coming Tuesday, the 18th of August, as you said, this the 100th anniversary of the 36th state, which was Tennessee, to ratify the 19th Amendment. August 26th is the date that we celebrate the full certification. That was when the Congress certified that 36 states had passed it and that the amendment was in full effect. So two occasions to celebrate. So we do have a pivotal role in the history of women's suffrage and have a lot to be proud of for that. But we still have the fight for people to actually be able to have full access to the ballot and full confidence that their votes will be counted. So it's an ongoing fight.
What leadership programs are in place for women in your county?
I'd be happy to speak about Tioga Women Lead. So a colleague of mine, Leanne Tinney, and I went to a women's conference at Binghamton University in which Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul sponsored. And that is where women within the university and local elected officials and government leaders came and talked about issues regarding women in the workplace and government when they take higher positions and, you know, kind of the things that they deal with every day. On the ride home, Leanne and I shared about, you know, how great that conference was and how important it was to encourage women to step up into leadership positions. And we decided on the car ride home that we should do that in Tioga County. So we do have a small county. However, it was within a couple of weeks, we sort of created an organization called Tioga Women Lead. We thought of half a dozen women in the community that were leaders in their environment, some in the business environment, some in government, some more in the creative arts kind of side, and invited them to join. And we brainstormed and put together an organization and with the goal of encouraging and developing women leaders within the county. We already had quite a few women coming up through the ranks, and we just thought if we could empower them and give them some skills, that would be great. So we've been, I think that was like 4 years ago, and we've been meeting and hosting events and engaged in the community since that time. The first thing that we kind of wanted to do was to work on, I would say, like women's self-esteem. So we invited speakers to come in and share their stories of developing more confidence, how to overcome challenges in your life, those kinds of things. So we had a series, we would have 4 or 5 events a year with speakers, and they would be small groups. So it was kind of intimate, so women could talk to one another. But then we would also talk about the skills. And then we also moved on to a half a day, actually it was a full day presentation called It's Up to You that we did. And so we had an all-day conference where we had several speakers come in and talk about different skills, how to handle different situations, empowerment, leadership, being well, you know, kind of emotionally well, and the whole, you know, what has created is sort of a support system for everyone throughout the county. And since that time, we have connected with other organizations within the county. For instance, there's an organization called Sisters as Leaders, and that is an organization that helps single mothers when they go through difficulty. This organization is there to help them, sometimes with expenses, but also sort of to navigate challenging situations. So, and there's another one, there's a business organization of women here called New York State Women, Susquehanna Chapter. We've connected with them. So now we've, you know, taken this little group and expanded it across the county. Further, Broome County women were interested in doing something like this. So we met with them, sort of shared how we did it. And so they've created a similar organization. We are connected with the Tioga County Chamber of Commerce. So they kind of take care of the procedural things. They run the money for us. So because we didn't want to get tied up in rules and regulations and forming a 501c3, because that just sort of takes our time away. And we wanted to get down and really start working with women and encouraging them to step into the future and be leaders.
What motivated you to run for office?
Well, I was motivated to run because somebody asked me. And that research on women in government has actually shown that that is very typical of women, that they'll get involved in an issue, a community issue related to their family or their neighborhood or justice or whatever it is, and show leadership in a non-governmental area or sort of in outside of the government. And then somebody will say, hey, you really could be on the other side of the table. You really could be a leader in our community on an elective basis. And that's what happened in my case as well. Research has shown that typically men just decide to run on their own, just decide that they, you know, can go ahead and do that. And they see themselves more typically as kind of leaders without having to be invited. So one point I would make to anybody who's interested in local government, state government, federal government, if you see a woman, if you're working with somebody who is who shows promise, and people can pretty much tell what leadership looks like, somebody who follows through and makes, you know, is able to connect with their communities, somebody who has the skills and the intelligence and the commitment, suggest that they run for office. You know, look out for folks who are natural leaders. This includes people of color, of course, as well, but we're talking about women right now. But that's one way that we can all contribute to a more diverse pipeline in the government.
Well, since I was in high school, for some odd reason, I always had an interest in government and politics. I can't tell you, maybe I was 16 or something like that, and we used to have debates at the lunch table. We were watching the presidential elections. I didn't know what I was talking about, but we got right into it. Ever since that time, I was drawn to government and to watching the political system and how it works. So I didn't really get involved in any political parties until much later in life, but I did spend 10 years working for the New York State Senate under Senator Libous, which was an opportunity that came out of the blue, and I absolutely said yes to that and learned so very much working for that office and had some great experiences. So that sort of gave me the tools, because in that office, there was a great deal of training and guidance on how to operate within the government. So that really gave me a groundwork. And then there came a time when I decided that I wanted to start making decisions for the well-being of my community. And that's when I decided that I wanted to run for county legislature.
Have you faced barriers as a woman leader?
I actually didn't run for office until my younger child was a senior in high school. So I kind of put that on myself, and so I didn't have the bandwidth to run and be out of the house for many evening meetings, that sort of thing. So whether that was my choice or kind of the structure of the family, et cetera, I myself didn't run until I was 50. So that obviously limited the range of where I could get to during a career. I was able to raise the money that I needed. I had actually been a fundraiser, a development officer in the nonprofit world before I ran for public office. So I had a few skills in that area that I brought to the table. But, you know, I did feel like these were some choices I'd made, but also kind of the structure of things all along that made it difficult for me to get started in a political career until I was 50.
I would have to say yes to that. So let me give you a picture. When I first started working in government, I would go to a lot of meetings. And the majority of the time, there was 90% men, 10% women. So every meeting I went into, you know, I was in somewhat called the minority. And that was a little challenging, and that was a little daunting, of course. But I just pulled up my boots and went in there and did it, said my piece. But working in government, especially on the local level, it seems like there is more challenges than when you go to higher level of government. I don't, and maybe that is true in the rural areas. Maybe they're not as progressive. Maybe they're more conservative, and so they're less inclined to support women, or women themselves don't feel confident enough to step into that environment. Because quite frankly, it's kind of scary. You're out there by yourself, making decisions and running for office. And unless you have a lot of support, it can be daunting. And for women themselves, if they have a family, they have that obligation. Some women really feel guilty, you know, leaving their family for night meetings and that kind of thing. So yeah, there's challenges out there. I will say, when I first started this, I was very much aware I had to be careful how I addressed people in a meeting. They didn't appreciate it if I came across too powerful, which is sad. If I had strong opinions, I felt like in the beginning I had to tamper them down so that the men sitting at the table wouldn't be offended that a woman was sharing her opinion so strongly. Mm-hmm. However, as time has gone on, that has changed. And I don't know if it's my age or my experience or just a decision that I made within myself that it doesn't really matter if you're male or female. If you're out there doing a job, you need to say what you need to say and do what you need to do that's best for everybody when you're a leader.
I think there remain many divisions in terms of access for full opportunities for women, many divisions in the country. And being able to run for public office certainly is one of those areas. We can see that it's still commonplace that women have more responsibility in the family for childcare, for home responsibilities, even when they are working full-time outside the home. Many more single-parent families are headed by women than men, so the vast majority. So those are kind of just simply the existing disparities in women's responsibilities make it difficult for women to carve out the time to run for public office. They often feel they will not be able to raise the funds that are needed for public office. And this can be true when women earn, in fact, and today is the day, as we talk, today is the day that Black women in this country finally have earned the same amount of money, have worked long enough to earn the same amount of average salary as white men for the whole previous year. So we find that the disparity in women's income for all kinds of women, they really don't have the access to fundraising. They don't have the access to networks of people with resources. So it can be much harder for women to raise money than for men. And then even if you get pull everything together that you need to run and then even to be elected, there are many instances of women being dismissed and patronized and not taken seriously. And I've heard many stories from women around New York State who have experienced, sort of bald-faced insults in public by their colleagues. And these comments may seem shocking in 2020, but this stuff still happens. And we see it at all different levels.
Who has been a role model to you in your career?
Well, you know, it's funny. I should say, oh yeah, there was one woman that really inspired me, but because of my age, when I was a young adult, there were very few women in my environment that were leaders. It was just about the time when I worked for IBM at that time, and it was just about that time when they started to recognize women in the environment. And so in an answer to that question, it really was a collection of people in the community. Actually, there was a gentleman who was a very strong leader in our community, but very knowledgeable. And he had excellent life lessons that he shared with people coming up. And he didn't care if they were male or female. He just said, you know, this is a good way to handle this situation. And so Mr. Ron Doherty, he had a lot of influence on how I thought about doing things in government in a leadership position. So, and after that, I read everything I got my hands on about women stepping into the business environment. And behind me, if you could see, there's a stack of books, and they're all empowerment leadership books. So I self-taught myself a lot. And I'm sort of a geek when it comes time to, you know, I love to read motivational stuff. So taught myself pretty much.
A couple of people come to mind, and in particular one organization, statewide organization being Eleanor's Legacy. It is dedicated to electing and supporting Democratic pro-choice women in New York State. I'm one of those, Democrat and pro-choice. The organization helped to fund my very first campaign, and they provide training. They provide a lot of support for women candidates and actually women who are elected. Locally, I would say Irene Stein, who was the long-term chair of the Democratic Committee in Tompkins County, has been a longtime friend and mentor in many, many areas on this, in my public service.
What advice would you give to women who are considering running for office?
I would really suggest, if you're interested, and start by talking to other people, not just women, but other people who, you know, anybody who seems to have similar values as yours, somebody whose work you admire, and ask them what it's like. Sit down and have one of those informational interviews. Ask what they think is required, what's involved, and what they would suggest. It's obviously different in every community. But there should be plenty of people around who would be happy to sit down and talk about, well, frankly, there are a lot of people happy to talk about what they do. So if what you're interested in is what they do, you can, I'm sure, hear from a lot of folks, and then translate that to how you would go about it and what you should do to decide whether run and how you can serve. So look for the folks in your community who are leading, and sit down and talk with them. If you are in a political party, go to the leadership of that party and make yourself known. Say, I'm thinking about this. You know, what are the opportunities, and you know, how can I go about it?
As a matter of fact, I've had several people reach out to me for advice and information. So the first thing, and this is something that I was very fortunate to experience. When I worked for the Senate, they actually sent me to political school, and it was the RNC at the time. But that was 30 years ago. But I learned how to run a campaign, you know, A to B. And so that experience I applied in my life, but also I know things change and data collection and all of that is different now than it was then. But the basics of how you go about running a campaign are basically the same. So and I find that when women decide they want to run for office, they do come to me and I help them lay out their strategy to run a campaign to get elected. And there's another thing, though. There's the politics and then there's the government side. And they work together, but they are two separate things. When you work in government, for me, and I share this with women, it's like your job. You have to do the best job you can to represent your constituency. And sometimes you have to step out of that political role. And so that's different. But anyway, when women come, I do try to encourage them in training and knowing the difference there. And I also advise women to be confident and to be thick-skinned, not to take anything personally, because sometimes you're going to run into prejudice and bias, whether it's because of what, you know, if you're a male or a woman, it doesn't really matter, but you just have to learn to have thick skin. And I guess that's what I tell people. Don't take things personally. Just try to move ahead and do the best job you can and push that other stuff aside.
Do you have advice for other women leaders in local government?
Well, as a woman leader, I have to say that the NYSAC organization is an asset to me. I'm sure it's for every elected official across the state, but for me personally, this organization has helped me. It's been a source of information. And if I have questions or I need help on an issue, the NYSAC organization is right there for me. And I am so pleased that they have picked up the Women's Leadership Institute. I mean, I don't know how far we're going to go with this, but you never know what we're going to do. But it's really been an asset and a support to me as a woman leader in New York State.
Yeah, I would say look out for each other. Support each other. Make sure that you're connecting with your sister colleagues. And there's a role that we can each have. And, you know, as simple as, often in a meeting, this is really concrete, but often in a meeting, you know, whose ideas get referenced, whose ideas get repeated or answered. If it seems like the dominant factor is just the men's ideas get bounced around and a woman will say something and it gets ignored, bring that back up again, recycle, you know, come back to her point and say, hey, I think we forgot, to mention what Carol said and to respond to that, or just support each other. Like, you know, I would agree with what Ellen had to say over there. That has a very strong effect on an interpersonal level. And you'd already asked earlier, have I had to overcome any gender bias or sexism in my experience? Subtle things like that do go on. Absolutely. And I don't want to automatically jump to, oh, the women are getting ignored. But sometimes you step back and you say, it does look like there's a pattern here. You know, if a man raises a topic, it gets attention. If a woman makes that same comment, is that getting, you know, brushed over? These can be small things that have a real impact in how effective a woman is and how confident a woman is. If it feels like you are ignored in a meeting, you're going to stop offering anything in those meetings. So it is really important for folks to look out for those interpersonal dynamics. I'm talking about really subtle things here. Obviously, when somebody is more, as I mentioned, I've heard examples of women being, you know, brazenly insulted and put down. Speak up then, absolutely. You know, if somebody were being insulted because they were a person of color, I think we need to all recognize we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't let that go by. We also shouldn't let pass if a woman is insulted that way. So there are ways that microaggressions can happen, and it's important for people to try to change that culture on a one-to-one basis as well as in the groups that you work in. So I think we do have some great opportunities as in this week, you know, just yesterday, Vice President Biden named for his running mate, the first woman of color, and to be on a major party ticket for vice president or for president. So this is a tremendous opportunity, tremendous moment for our country. I think whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, I hope you can recognize that another barrier has been broken. And whoever gets elected, I think it needs to be a normal thing, not remarkable, that people of color and that women are nominated for office at all levels and fully considered to be qualified to serve. We as a country need the energies and intelligence of every single American, of every single person here, in order to solve the problems of our country, the problems of our smaller communities as well. And we can't afford to throw away any individuals or any communities in this. We're all in this together.
Thanks for listening to this NYSAC podcast. Keep tuning in to hear more insightful conversations on county government throughout New York State. As always, feel free to reach out to our staff if there is a topic you would like to hear us discuss on the podcast.